Welcome one and all to another day here at the Damage Worth. Me, John Arola, and returning after far too long of a wait, Farron Cousins himself. Farron, there was a request last week for you to be on the show. So we took our regularly scheduled host, tell him to kick rocks, and here you are. Welcome.
Thank you. That's how it should be, though. Anytime somebody says bring Farron on, we've got to immediately just get me back.
100%. But look, we're also fair, okay? Look, yes, we did use that policy to bring you on. But if somebody suggests another person right now, I will kick him from this call and bring that person in. I do whatever the mob tells me to do. Anyway, thank you for being here. We got a lot of fun stuff to talk about. Of course, today is State of the Union Day and we're fresh off Super Tuesday. So a lot going on. How you feeling about the news recently?
About as good as can be expected, I guess. I've been following a lot of like Trump's lawyers and the just crazy things they're filing in court. So that keeps me very entertained these days. Beyond that, though, news is actually pretty disappointing all across the board.
Well, we've got some terrible people to break down today, which I find to be fun. And I, like you, we have been following a lot of the legal stuff recently. I think that today is actually... I think it's legal brouhaha free, actually, for the first time in a long time, if I'm not mistaken. No, I think it actually is. So apologies for that. But everyone watching, I did talk a little bit about that in today's pre-port. And I don't often talk about the pre-port on the full show, in particular for those of you who maybe listen to this as a podcast. The podcast is the first hour of the show. I do want to remind everyone that after a long wait following the birth of baby Reyna, the pre-port is back. And it goes live about a half an hour before the show goes live. So that's about 9:30 a.m. Pacific time. And then whatever that is on the East Coast, I guess 12:30. And we talk for 20, 30 minutes about a bunch of different stories that unfortunately can't make it onto the show. It's more casual and the language filters are not as restrictive. So we get to have a little bit of fun in that way. So feel free to join up. It's a lot of fun. And if you become a subscriber and ring the bell or whatever the hell YouTube's doing in that area these days, you can get alerts for those live streams as well. Now, with all that said, Farron, are you ready to talk some politics?
Absolutely, let's do it.
Okay, let's report on some damage, starting with this.
Making the wealthy pay their fair share, some Republicans want Medicare and Social Security to sunset. I'm not saying it's a majority. Give you a copy of the proposal. That means Congress doesn't vote. Well, I'm glad to see you. And I tell you, I enjoy conversion.
That was last year's State of the Union speech and the Republican reaction, their behavior in response to Donald Trump saying that they want to kill these popular programs, which I'm sorry, but they do. And you saw the booing and the yells of liar. And then you saw a baboon wearing a baboon skin shouting as well. And there was just a lot of, I would say, wild behavior out of line with the claims that Biden was making. Well, not this year, because we got a new speaker in town, Mike Johnson, and he's not going to stand for any of that stuff. And he's also not going to be able to stop any of that stuff, but he's given it the old college try, the old evangelical, not a real college try. He said to a group of lawmakers on the Republican side, decorum is the order of the day. Okay, put that on the gravestone of the Republican Party. He said we should carry ourselves with good decorum, another member said. He just said, let's have the appropriate decorum. Apparently that word was thrown around many times. We don't need to be shrill, you know, we got to avoid that. We need to base things upon policy, upon facts, upon reality of situations. They'll have to be reacquainted to that. Let them do the gaslighting, let them do the blaming. I think the American people know who is responsible for the many worldwide crises that we have. Now, I don't know who that last person is, but they seem, look, a little bit detached from reality, but they seem reasonable-ish, they seem mature-ish. And let's keep it real. The comments for decorum were given to like a lot of Republicans, but it is not difficult to imagine that maybe it was targeted at just a few people. It reminds me of when Michael Scott on The Office said some racist stuff. So everybody had to take sensitivity training even though they only needed his signature saying he'd taken the class. So I don't know if Marjorie Greene or Lauren Boebert got the message, but perhaps they'll settle down just a little bit. Farron, what do you think?
I don't think these Republicans even know how to conduct themselves like rational, mature, adult human beings. And having said that, I think Biden tonight, he should start it. He should come up to the podium and say, all right, before I get into this, I want to see everybody's hands, Lauren Boebert. Let's make sure nothing's going on over there.
No.
Just right out the gate, Biden needs to come out and humiliate them and then get into the speech and move on from there. But I mean, look, the best thing in the world for the Democrats is if these Republicans do make complete fools of themselves. I mean, obviously that can be used in campaign ads. It can be used all over the country. So I'm sure a lot of Democrats are hoping that these Republicans do not take Speaker Johnson's advice because they want those viral clips. They want to show what we're actually dealing with. And it shouldn't be hard. Again, these people have proven time and time again, they do not conduct themselves properly. They cannot hold it in. I mean, they are compelled to shout out every single thing they're thinking. And I do think, by the way, last year, Biden did a great job talking about the cuts to Social Security that Republicans want. He had a great response to their heckling, like, hey, call my office. I'll send it to you right now. Just let me know. So he actually does pretty well in these situations. So there's going to be something that happens. I think we're pretty much all in agreement that something weird is going to happen tonight. We just have to wait and see who it's going to be from.
I mean, like, all of the incentives are to do it. Like, so Mike Johnson, who none of them respect, and he might not be speaker in a week and a half, is telling them to have decorum. But if they shout out that you're a pedophile, they raise $5 million in the next day. Different incentives. I don't know which way they're going to go with that. So I think they definitely will. Look, I on some level like the idea of Biden coming out and roasting them. I think that would be great. I don't know if he could really do it. I think that if Obama had decided to go in that direction, he could have really killed it. But that said, what I would like to see is I want Biden to come out and really set the agenda for what you want to do in this candidacy and what the second term would be. Sure, talk about the State of the Union and all that stuff and point out that the Republicans killed the border bill. That's the thing, by the way, they're going to freak out about when he mentions that. But also say what you want to do. And more important than what you say is what you do before you go out there. Because if he doesn't like shotgun a Four Loko or something, I'm going to be really disappointed because we need maximal energy Biden. I want him to burn through like 10% of his remaining life force for this speech because he needs it. But in any event, look, Representative Tim Burchett sort of tried to turn the tables after the decorum talks. So he says, will they do it? Like, will the Democrats show decorum? Somebody asked me that earlier and I said, does the Baptist church got a bus? Of course they will, because he's going to say some very offensive things. He's going to attack us, you know, Biden. He's such a bomb thrower. Anyway, I think we just need to try to be a little classy. Consider where we're at, let the other side do that. You know, they did it to Trump and nobody said boo. But when we do it, we're going to get made an example of it. What do you mean they did it to Trump? They're the Democrats. They don't have it in them to be disruptive. Like, okay, I know they went to a shot of AOC and she looked unhappy. Ooh, so disruptive. But look, what he seems to be implying is maybe the most disruptive thing, which I guess would be this. You could see there, okay, Pelosi ripped up the speech. And I think earlier she'd done like a little thing like that. Should she do that? Perhaps not. But in her defense, I guess, she waited until the very end. People are literally walking out. It's like being caught on a hot mic. It was definitely prepared and everything. But it's not like she interrupted him while he was talking about Israel or something like that. And that is really like the only example. Whereas on the Republican side, I mean, sure, you've got Lauren Boebert and Marjorie Greene like hooting and hollering like animals, completely losing their mind in a performative fashion. But you even have, you go back, Joe Wilson shouting, you lie. That was considered like the first big breach of decorum. That was a Republican. And look, we'll see what happens. Marjorie Greene has been tweeting a lot about the State of the Union, implying that I guess you can't talk about foreign policy or something. That would be news to every president that's ever given one. So I expect that they'll go crazy. Any other thoughts from you?
No, but I do agree. Well, I do have extra thoughts. Actually, I do agree with you, especially about Biden has to come with some energy. Obviously, with the way things are working out right now, ton of attention being paid to the cognitive abilities of Biden and Trump. Yes. If Biden comes out there and he messes up one word, every right-wing media outlet's going to be talking about it nonstop headline news for 2 weeks. He has to be at the very top of his game in a way that he's probably never been throughout his whole career. No screw-ups, no slip-ups, no mixing up somebody's name, misreading a teleprompter. And you can't be the sleepy Joe. Don't come out there with the ice cream cone. No, I mean, save that for later. We're good with that. Don't freak Jesse Waters out. He doesn't like that.
No, but makes me comfortable.
I do think Biden can pull it together. And if he does do a powerful performance where he seems like, okay, we've seen nothing but reports about how old he is and how bad his brain is for 3 months straight, he actually seems okay. If people can look at it and see that, I think we might see a little bit of turnaround with the polls. But like you said, too, it's got to be policy. It's got to be, look, here's where we've come from.
Yeah,
this could be my last State of the Union. So let's talk about what we've done. But let's talk about the work to be done, because I get it. I understand a lot of you. We look good on paper, but when you get down to the nitty gritty and individuals, things aren't that great for you. We're going to get you there. I'm going to get you there. That is the message he has to send tonight. And he's got to do it with at least a little bit of energy matching what he had last year, or preferably more so.
Yeah. And look, he could talk about, you know, a lot of the good economic news has come out over the past couple of months. And what will happen is he will say all of these good things that are happening, and then the Republicans will be utterly silent. They will not feel any of those previous norms of celebrating the success of the nation. And show them being sour faced at the idea that unemployment is down, that wages are rising, the stock market's doing well, all of those things that they always say that they're in favor of, they're going to be all sour faced and mad about. Show that to the American people. Remind them that you had this bill to fix the issue at the border and they killed it. Definitely do all of that. And my final point will be, assuming that that was actually last year, that was last year that they did that. That feels like 8 years ago that does it not? How could that only have been last year? Dear God.
They call it Super Tuesday for a reason. This is a big one. And they tell me, the pundits and otherwise, that there's never been one like this. There's never been anything so conclusive.
There's still some work to be done to unify the Republican Party. And that's going to depend a lot on his tone tonight and whether or not he stops doing things like calling her bird brain.
So there, Karl Rove set out like the minimum bar for Donald Trump to unify the party. And good news for Karl Rove, he hasn't called Nikki Haley bird brain. He's mocked her and stuff like that. But other challenges remain. And that's what we want to focus on right here. I mean, I think at this point, everybody knows that Donald Trump's victory was significant. I mean, he won all but one state. It was a pretty dominating win. Not as dominating on his side as Joe Biden's was on the other side. But of course, Donald Trump's never going to admit that. And everybody knows that there was still a significant percentage of the vote that would have preferred Haley. And that's potentially a problem for Donald Trump. But there's other indications of trouble for Trump, some electoral weaknesses that have always been true of him and that he would very much like to no longer have be true if he's going to win in November. So we're going to talk about all of that in this case and give you an idea of what are some of the challenges facing Donald Trump. I think we have a much better grasp of Biden's electoral troubles at this point than Trump. And so you have the sort of never Trump thing. An exit poll this Tuesday found that about 1/3 of Republican voters in North Carolina, Virginia, and California said they could not guarantee they would support the GOP presidential candidate in November. And look, I think the easy money is that the vast majority of them will, but how many won't? And in close swing states, how many can he afford to lose? And that's just the Haley angle. But beyond that are bigger troubles, troubles that theoretically Biden could really make some gain some ground on. So that is the issues with certain groups of voters that Trump still has that he had in 2020. That suburban voters, moderates, and independent leading Republicans, and Republicans who voted for Biden. So we want to give you some of those numbers. Trump lost suburban precincts in Virginia despite carrying the state by 28 points. In North Carolina, his 51-point victory was tempered by much narrower margins in the highly educated and affluent suburbs. So suburbs have always been a problem for Trump. And they're trying to do what they always do to fix that problem, which is, okay, it's suburbs, it's soccer moms. Let's scare the hell out of them by talking about brown and black people. So they're doing that. They're focusing on the border and stuff like that, but it didn't work in 2020. Who knows if it will here? And of course, there are some issues that are trouble for Trump. Abortions is trouble as well. He lost to Ms. Haley among Republican primary voters in Virginia who oppose a nationwide abortion ban. And that, look, that's about Republicans, but there's a lot of independents who are not at the extreme right-wing position on abortion. And this is Trump, the guy who killed Roe v. Wade, the guy who's talking about national abortion bans. So that could really hurt him in some of these areas where he can't afford to lose as big as he did in 2020. We have more, but Farron, I want your thoughts about some of these various troubles.
Yeah, I think a lot of what Donald Trump's trouble is right now, especially with some of these suburban voters, is the fact that they've already worn out their talking points. You know, you bring up the fact that, oh, you've got to be scared of the people coming across the border. And Republicans have been screaming that since January 20th, 2021 at 12:01 Eastern. As soon as Biden became president, they started ranting about the border. And at this point, I'm not saying the border is not an issue, but when you have these people in these states that are very, very far away from the border, and sure, for years they've thought, well, we got to do something about this. We got to do something about what? I'm going about my daily life. Yeah, I've been told I need to be afraid of this, but I go to the grocery store, I go to my job. I'm not actually seeing this. So what am I being afraid of? You have people that really are waking up to that, because as we're seeing in the polls that are coming out now, you know, 3 months ago, immigration was the number one issue for voters in nearly every poll. Immigration has now fallen down to number three. The top one, by the way, in one of the most recent polls was political extremism. Hmm. So these people are looking at this like, okay, well, I guess it's an issue, but is it really that big of an issue to me? Is that the biggest threat to me, as the Republicans are saying? No, it's not. These people are finally waking up and saying that. So I think the exhaustion in general of a lot of these talking points, with them saying, oh, the economy was better under Trump than it is with Biden, people are looking down and they're saying, well, actually, no, it's not. I mean, certain things have gotten worse that are obviously outside of Biden's control. You know, the housing prices. Biden is not the one out there calling your local realtor saying, hey, go ahead and increase the price on that one by $250,000. Biden's not doing that. He is not responsible for the increased prices you're seeing at the grocery store. And as his administration has gone on, the blame has shifted from being on him for those things to, wait a minute, we got corporations doing this stuff. We got Republicans killing legislation. I'm starting to see what's happening. And sure, as we get closer to the election, people do pay more attention to the news. So I think all of that is detrimental for Donald Trump, especially with him being the last Republican now. 100% of that spotlight is on him. I mean, as recently as Monday, all of the news sites I check every day had at least one story about Nikki Haley. Well, yeah, they don't have to do that anymore. So those spots that were reserved for Nikki Haley or DeSantis 2 months ago or Ramaswamy, it's all Trump now. They have to focus on him solely. And the more he's in the spotlight, the worse it is for him, and the worse it is for him with the moderates and independents in the Republican Party and, you know, those on the fence.
Yeah, he's going to be giving all of these speeches, not attacking Nikki Haley, which, yeah, the media covered or whatever. But when he's attacking Joe Biden, the Democrats, I think the media is more likely to pick that up. And with him doing these speeches, that the media is going to be focusing on, all of his mental short, like blow ups and breakdowns and all that are going to be front and center. And as we get closer to the election and they start demonizing the fact that we have elections and the Proud Boys are marching again, that political extremism is going to seem very salient. So I do agree. Hopefully he will use the State of the Union to reassure people in some of the stuff. Maybe the economic news will continue to sort of trend in a better direction. We'll see. We'll see. But in any event, troubles remain for Donald Trump. Donald Trump, who has been running as fast as he can for the last year from anyone challenging him to a debate, all of a sudden wants nothing more than to be on that debate stage. He bleated this: "It is important for the capital G good of our country that Joe Biden and I, capital D, debate issues that are so vital to America and the American people. Therefore, I am calling for capital D debates anytime, anywhere, any place. The debates can be run by the corrupt DNC or their subsidiary, the Commission on Presidential Debates." That's not remotely true, you maniac. "I look forward to receiving a response. Thank you for your attention to this matter." Did ChatGPT write that? Why is he being so uncharacteristically polite at the end of that? But I get it. He thinks they're not going to take him up on this, so you can needle him a little bit, and he might be right. But anyway, I want to remind you all that in addition to throwing down this gauntlet that he wants to debate Joe Biden, he also has vowed to go live and do live commentary to the State of the Union. So prepare yourselves for that. In any event, there has been a response to his declaration that he wants to debate. Communications Director for Biden-Harris 2024 says, "I know Donald Trump's thirsty for attention, struggling to expand his appeal beyond the MAGA base. And that's a conversation we'll have at the appropriate time in this cycle. But if he's so desperate to see President Biden in prime time, he doesn't have to wait. He can join the tens of millions of Americans who will tune in to watch the State of the Union. He might even learn a thing or two about bringing people together and actually delivering for the American people." So that was aggressive, and I like it for that reason. But as I said, before we launch into our discussion of this, it's not guaranteed that they're going to have one. Remains to be seen. But take a look at this. This is Peter Doocy asking the press secretary about this challenge.
"Is President Biden going to commit to a debate with Donald Trump?"
"That's something for the campaign to speak to."
"Well, we know when the debates are going to be. We know where they're going to be. Is he going to go?"
"You should speak to the campaign."
"In 2020, once it got down to one-on-one, Joe Biden said, 'I can hardly wait to debate him.' How about now?"
"I'm going to sound like a broken record. You should reach out to the campaign."
Sounds like she's happy to have that answer to fall back on there.
So look, when she says, you know, that's for the campaign to say, not her, I think that that's actually fair. I mean, she's supposed to speak to him as president, the policy and all that. I think that the campaign is legitimately a thing that's not super connected to her job. But that said, I don't think it's unfair to read into that, that it is certainly not a lock that there will be debates. You know, maybe the money should be on one and we'll debate that. But Biden didn't debate in the Democratic primary. And we know that he's been sort of hesitant to, you know, be in sort of unscripted areas. He did his Seth Meyers interview, but he avoided the interview for the Super Bowl. So I'm curious, Varian, what you think about this. Do you think that they will have debates? Do you think that he should have debates? What do you think?
I do not think that they will, but I actually do think that they should. Look, back in the 2020 debates, because we only ended up with two actual debates, I think Biden did a very good job. He held his own and he was good. Obviously, I don't think we're dealing with the same Biden today that we were dealing with back then. So I can't guarantee that, oh, he'll go in there and be able to whoop up on Trump. But I do think that we should do this. I don't think we should be waiting till September and October for people to finally see these two guys together. And I'll take it one step further too. It shouldn't just be those two guys. We have other people that are also running that should be on that debate stage. I think if we're going to do it, let's do it. Let's have the whole, you know, section filled up there with all of these people. Maybe
you're talking like RFK Jr.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, especially considering, you know, the news about him that came out today, put him up on the stage. I definitely want to see that. So I do think the public needs to see all of these folks running for president. They need to see them all speaking and interacting and having to answer questions off the cuff that is not scripted. They're not reading off a prompter. I think that's what needs to happen. And I also just real quick want to circle back. I am so looking forward to Donald Trump becoming a streamer tonight. I just can't imagine him being like, "We've got a couple of super chats. Let me get to those. And don't forget to smash that like button, subscribe." That's going to be wonderful. But in all seriousness, I do want the debates now. I think Biden would be okay. I think he can do it. And Trump gets so weird during debates that at the very least, we'll get some good Saturday Night Live episodes out of it. But let's do it before we get to September. The public needs to see it.
I agree. I loved so much of that. First of all, I don't know how I had missed the RFK Jr. stuff, but I just briefly Googled it and what the hell? I don't know if maybe we'll have to find a time to talk about that, but he is a wild dude, geez. But on Trump as the streamer, I think he means he's gonna like live bleed it on True Social, but I love the idea that he's set up like a bedroom with like blue and purple neon lights in the background. And he's got like, you know, the animations that come up with new subs. I would love to see that. I don't think we'll, he's pounding like an energy drink or something. He's like, you know what? It's a commercial break. Let's fit in one round of Among Us.
Yeah.
But anyway, look, I don't know if I necessarily agree about all of the other candidates. I think there does have to be a threshold, but theoretically, you know, if a third party candidate is above a certain threshold, yeah, I think that they should qualify. I don't know exactly what that threshold should be or whether any of them will, but I think that's certainly a conversation to be had. What I will say is I am nervous about him on the debate stage right now, but you know what? I am a person who believes that you should have principles. And I have said that debates are a good thing, and I think they should be owed to the American people. So whether I am a little bit worried about his performance or not, I agree. Debates should be a part of these elections, and he should do it. And what I would also remind people of is, it's very easy to imagine them on stage and Trump is just like tearing him up or giving him COVID or whatever. Because again, remember, Trump lied about having COVID the last time he was on the stage with Joe Biden. But anyway, I will also remind you, Trump is not a good debater. I think that there's a case to be made that based on the polling, he's never won a debate against Clinton or against Joe Biden. And honestly, if he gets on the stage and he's just saying wild conspiracy theories and attacking old Grandpa Joe, that might lead to some sympathy for Joe Biden at that point. And Trump may be stumbling over his words and calling him Obama and stuff like that. He might come out looking more deranged than Joe Biden does. And one final bit of context, and then we'll do a bit more discussion. If Joe Biden does decide to back out, which I don't want him to, I just want to remind everyone that a precedent has been set, not by Joe Biden to back out of debates, although he did in the Democratic primary, but Trump. Trump said he was going to skip the GOP presidential debates, and then he did it. He didn't do any of those debates. He also, by the way, canceled one of his debates with Joe Biden in 2020 because he didn't want to do it virtually. He'll only do it if he can give someone a respiratory disease. And he also backed out in 2016 out of one of the Fox Republican primary debates. So he has a long record of just skipping out on debates. So if Biden decides to, it's not like that's not kind of fair at this point, but Farron, more thoughts.
It also, like you said, if Biden performs poorly, you know, if they do a debate this month or next month and Biden performs poorly, then okay, now you know, you got to work on this. This is an area that you've got to focus more attention on. So if there's bugs in the system, let's get the bugs out in April instead of waiting to the last month before people head to the polls and you're tripping at the finish line. Let's do it now. And worst case scenario too, we still have a Democratic convention. And if Biden gets up there and enough people are like, oh God, oh dear, we can right the ship. We can do the very difficult thing that, you know, it's kind of unprecedented, but we still have the power to actually do it.
Yep.
And we may have to do it. Those are things, again, like we got to know now, can he do this in September and October? And we don't want to find out in September and October. It'd be great to find out in March or April and then say, okay, this guy, he's got it. He's fine. We're good. We'll give him a little more prep and he'll knock it out of the park in the fall. Yeah. Or, oh dear God, this is an all hands on deck moment. Mm-hmm. Let's get this fixed while we have time to fix it.
K Carrie Lake has said that she's a new Carrie Lake. She's a unifier, okay? She's a more mature person. She's not spreading division and hatred, but she apparently forgot about that because she launched a pretty vicious attack against another candidate and she is being roasted for it. Not by Democrats. It wouldn't matter if she was being criticized by Democrats. I mock, Carrie Lake. Nobody cares about that. It's Republicans, conservatives who are attacking her this time. And here is what she tweeted. It was on Nikki Haley on the way out. She announced she's gonna leave the race. So Carrie Lake tweets, reports, Nimrata Haley will suspend her campaign today after more humiliating landslide loses on Super Tuesday. You're amazing, okay? You're giving Marge a run for her money there. So what is she doing? Well, she's taking Nikki Haley's name, misspelling it, because you don't need to respect the name of someone whose name doesn't sound American to you, and mocking her in that way. When Donald Trump is trying to get the Haley voters to support him now, she's kicking Nikki Haley on the way out in a clearly bigoted fashion. And as I said, this is the area where you might expect the Democrats would criticize her, but that's not what we're focusing on here. These are conservatives. Here is a Princeton professor, a high profile conservative, Robert P. George, who said, Miss Lake, there is nothing wrong with Nikki Haley's given first name. It's quite a beautiful name, really. But like former President Trump, you use it in a prejudicial manner to make her seem foreign. That's wrong. It's unchristian and un-American. It appeals to the worst in us. The communications director for Nikki Haley, or at least during the campaign, I'm not sure if she will remain her communications director, perhaps she will, said no peace, bitch, to stealing Meghan McCain's little. I just love the idea that for the rest of Carrie Lake's life, people are gonna be tweeting no peace, bitch, at her after what Meghan McCain did. You have a conservative editor and Fox radio analyst who said, shot, Lake has been drifting towards the center, making overtures to the moderate wing. Chaser, her actual tweet. And here's one more, okay? This is Jim Garrity of the National Review and the Washington Post. It says, looks like Ruben Gallego just clinched the top seed and the bye week, which is sports talk. I don't know which sport, but some of them. So conservatives would love it if she would like grow up just a little bit and stop being terrible, but that's who she is, Farron. I don't know what else she knows how to do. What do you think?
You know, it's funny because even before this story, I have a video that's going up later today that basically I say that Carrie Lake, out of everybody in politics this week, had the worst possible week. And then you add in all of this stuff too. And it's just, it's going so badly for her that it really is comical. If you were writing a movie about let's have a politician and let's just have everything in the world go wrong for them, you wouldn't even be able to cook up all of the things that have happened to Carrie Lake, even just this last week, right? So you got a judge, or actually the Arizona State Supreme Court this week, that told her, you cannot avoid the defamation lawsuit brought against you by the Maricopa County Recorder. So she's got a big defamation suit that she's facing for basically slandering this guy to hell and back, saying he rigged the election against her. She loses Kyrsten Sinema from that race, where her only possible hope, according to the polls, was Sinema bringing over just enough Democrats to make Gallego lose. Even though, for the record, all the recent polls showed, even in a three-way race, Gallego wins. But you take Sinema out, he wins by an even larger margin. Mm-hmm. So she was already like, okay, I'm on the ropes. What do I do? Let me just go ahead and piss off the remaining Republicans that I haven't pissed off yet, especially after she got the dude fired by secretly recording conversations and admitting, which people forget, she's like, I got other conversations recorded with other people.
Yeah.
So nobody trusts her. The McCain family, that's still hugely respected in Arizona, they've gone after her. Now the moderates are coming. I mean, she has, I'm assuming, maybe a kink for humiliation at this point, because that's the only logical explanation for why she keeps publicly humiliating herself and then acting like she's maybe totally cool with it. And yeah, no shame there, right? I mean, if that's what you're into, go for it. But
some people like to do it publicly, you know? And thank you for that. So I wasn't even familiar with a couple of those little bad news stories for her, but there's a lot of bad stuff. Look, the high profile continuing feud with Meghan McCain, I thought that was bad enough just because I knew that Meghan McCain, you know, had been on The View. Then I found out, and most people don't know this, her dad was John McCain. So that's definitely gonna hurt Kerry. Like, I'm kidding. Of course, Meghan McCain says that in every single tweet she puts out. But anyway, yeah, look, all of this is bad. And look, you're speculating that maybe it's a kink. I think that there are, as we've been talking about incentives throughout today's show, there are so many incentives to just be horrible. The base wants you to be horrible. They will reward you for being horrible. But that doesn't work everywhere equally. Like, Marjorie Greene can be as terrible as she wants to be. She is in a deeply red district. That's how you win in that district. Carrie Lake is in Arizona. Arizona is not like deep red Florida or whatever. It's not Alabama. She lost her last election. She needs to bring over other sorts of people, and all she can do is divide. That's all she knows how to do. And the same conspiracy theories that you can stress in your campaign that help you in a Republican primary are not convincing to Democrats or independents. They don't like that stuff. So I think that she's just like, maybe if she ran for Congress in a part of Arizona that's really red, she'd have a chance. But running at the state level in a swing state like Arizona is just not the strategy. And I think that the Republicans have really wasted an opportunity here to win this seat, which they could if they had a reasonable candidate.
Yeah, any other thoughts? You talk about incentives for being horrible, and just kind of as an afterthought, this could be a, you know, topic of its own, but there's a lot of incentives for being horrible. I mean, I think we've seen that with a lot of people who started off, you know, being commentators on the left, and you know, tons of them that immediately said, oh, wait a minute, if I say something stupid like a Republican, I start getting Republican money. So there's incentives in many different areas for people to start being horrible. But in politics especially, we've seen it with J.D. Vance, right? I mean, we see it with so many of these people that actually start off with, okay, maybe they're not a complete buffoon, maybe they're a reasonable person, but then they get that taste of fame. That's what happened with Kerry Lake. That's what happened with Matt Gaetz. He was just a typical Republican, but as soon as he came into office, his first piece of legislation within the first couple of weeks was to abolish the EPA. And he got a lot of headlines for that. And suddenly when he gets that, he says, appearances in the media. Okay, all right, I see how the game is played here. If I just be the most extreme, the most radical, the most crazy person out there, I can be in the headlines, I can get the attention. And sometimes that attention does draw some pretty big donors to me.
Yeah.
What's funny is that with Kerry Lake, she's like the only one I've seen where it actually hasn't really worked out for her, just the exact opposite. What's happening with Kerry Lake is what should happen with all these people who try to be more and more horrible chasing money, but they all succeeded at it. And somehow she just can't get it right. She just keeps on losing. And it's hilarious to watch. I love talking about Kerry Lake because it really is just a comedy of errors at this point. 100%. With her.
Yeah, and the fact that she still thus far has not won makes it not like a tragedy in the end. So I agree in that case. You know when you think someone's perfect and then you find out that they were a murderer all along? No, is that just me? Just me and Donald Trump? He's certainly feeling that feeling. Former congressional candidate Daniel Rodimer, who had at one point received Donald Trump's complete and total endorsement, has just turned himself into the authorities in Las Vegas after being charged with murder. Here is the tweet where Donald Trump endorsed the guy, saying he'll be an incredible congressman, a former professional wrestler, sort of. He will fight for lower taxes, better education, and more capital J jobs. And he'll support our brave law enforcement. Well, he'll certainly give them more work to do, if nothing else. But here is what we're talking about when we talk about murder. Rodimer, who is suspected in the killing of 47-year-old Christopher Tapp back in October of last year. So Tapp allegedly offered cocaine to Rodimer's stepdaughter during a party at a resort. Tapp previously served 2 decades in prison after being convicted of rape and murder charges that DNA evidence later proved false. So obviously this is a troubled guy as well. So all of that, you know, being understood. A witness attending the party in Tapp's suite overheard Rodimer telling Tapp if you ever talk to my daughter again, I'll expletive kill you. An additional witness said that she heard Dan knock Christopher to the ground, at which time Christopher's head hit a small table. Oh, well, it's only a small table. And then he continued to punch Christopher throughout his head and body. And a lot of that is damning. But it's not nearly as damning as this. So they found text messages between Rodimer and his wife that are slightly suspicious. I'm going to read this text message for you, and you tell me if you can see the suspicious part. The wife says, "I watched you murder somebody, like, let that sink in, you blanking psychopath." So, a little bit damning. In any event, as was said earlier, he was technically a professional wrestler before he entered politics. He had a one-year developmental agree with the equivalent of the WWE's Farm League. It's not like he was headlining WrestleMania, but he ran two unsuccessful campaigns for Congress. So that's 2020 campaign in Nevada and the January 2021 special election for Texas's 6th congressional district. So on top of everything, including possibly murder, seems like a bit of a carpetbagger. But even before his first run, because you might be thinking, you can't really get on Donald Trump for endorsing this guy for later maybe murdering someone. So he had already been accused of assault, not convicted at that point, but he had boasted publicly that he liked to F people up. And of course, why would that stop Donald Trump from endorsing him? These are the sorts of people they want to fill government with. Grifters and liars and people there to dismantle the administrative state and violent thugs. He would hardly have been the first. Farron, what do you think?
Like you said, obviously this guy was like the number one professional wrestler in the country. That's actually like the one of the sports like I don't know anything about. So I don't know any of that. But did you really, if you were at least trained somewhat in wrestling in any way, did you have to like beat the guy to death allegedly? Could you have not like kind of wrapped him up and restrained him and said, I've got him. He's not going to give cocaine to anybody tonight. I mean, it just seems overly extreme, especially because you were at his party.
Yeah.
So the smart thing to do instead of allegedly murdering somebody is say, hey, stepdaughter, we're out of here. Party's over. Let's leave. And then you leave and you no longer associate with that person whatsoever. And everybody gets to still be alive. Like that's probably the best outcome. So I don't know how that broke down. I don't know what happened, but obviously if of course, because these are alleged, we got to be super careful about saying that. If this guy is convicted, I think the first thing we need, and possibly even before conviction, let's get a good mental health evaluation, because your first instinct should not be to murder somebody.
Yeah.
So that, you know, your first instinct shouldn't even be insane violence. So that's what we really need to get to the heart of. Like, is something wrong with him? Is there something that we can, you know, get him help for rather than just shoving him off into a prison and saying, all right, well, we'll see you in 20 years. And that's kind of the problem with this, is that a lot of these crimes that are committed, it's just, okay, now you're in lockdown for a few decades and we'll see you when you get out. And people don't actually get the help that they need. So I think that's what kind of needs to happen here, because this is not a normal response to a situation like what is described in this incident.
Not for a normal person at the very least. And again, as you said, allegations. We don't know exactly what happened. Maybe there were extenuating circumstances that even if he did it, merited it. I can't come up with what those would be, but you know, we don't pass total judgment. All I'm saying is, and this is based on the speculation, is there is too much acceptance for people like this on the right. And I have no doubt that while we're condemning this guy, at least if the allegations are true, like, does anyone think that like Matt Walsh isn't gonna do like a positive segment about this guy? Like, yeah, somebody offered drugs, you kill him. That's what we should have as our Congress people. I don't doubt it at all. Missouri Republicans have truly outdone themselves in their anti-gay agenda. And whatever you think I'm about to reveal to you, you're not thinking big enough, because they have gone absolutely insane. They have this new bill introduced in the Missouri House that would literally criminalize teachers who validate a transgender child's gender by utilizing their chosen names and pronouns. So you might think, well, I've heard stuff like this that Republicans have been doing. No, we're not talking about like potentially the person being reprimanded or even losing their job over saying a pronoun, being polite. It goes way beyond that. This is House Bill 2885. It proposes making it a Class E felony for teachers or school counselors to assist in the social transition of a transgender child. They define that as the process by which an individual adopts the name, pronouns, and gender expression, such as clothing or haircuts that match the individual's gender identity and not the gender assumed by the individual's sex at birth. Again, they seem to show an understanding that there is a distinction between gender and sex in their definition, but not enough that they don't want to lock people up over it. So if you violate this by saying a word, you could be subject to a $10,000 fine, imprisonment, and placement on the state's sexual offender registry as a tier one sexual offender. That means that you would not be allowed to reside within 500 feet of a school or daycare. So effectively, that's it for you being a teacher. So if you say he, when he asks you to say he, you could literally go to jail. And we will consider you to be a sex offender on the same level as rapists, legally. Worse than they think of rapists on the right, since they make so many goddamn apologies for them on a daily basis. And they don't seem to be bothered by the fact that Donald Trump literally sexually abused a woman. They think this is worse than that sort of activity. Farron, it's not law yet. Perhaps it won't become law, but this is what they're proposing.
You know, when we first started seeing these anti-LGBTQ bills, especially down here in Florida, I said at the time when I was doing segments, I said, every one of these, this is just the beginning. The ultimate goal is to legislate transgender human beings out of existence. And this is a continuation of that, because that is the ultimate goal. They want to legislate anyone in the LGBTQ community out of existence entirely. And if you are an enabler because they say, hey, you know, refer to me as he or refer to me as she, and you say, all right, sure, whatever. Uh-oh, suddenly you're now a sex offender. You can no longer hold the job that you went to school for, that you get your certificates for, that you go to continuing education for every year. You're done. Your life is ruined because you used he or she or they or them. This, yep. I can't even, it's, I'm at a loss for words because it pisses me off, because my wife is an educator. And, mm-hmm. you know, I know what she has to deal with. And I know that we down here are in an exceptionally red area. And we've had issues come up, you know, with the anti-CRT legislation in Florida that my family has personally had to deal with. And it is infuriating because I don't think people truly understand how bad it is. You know, yes, you can see it from afar and you can talk about the stories and it is, it's bad. Oh, this is so bad. Try living it.
Yeah.
It's so much worse than what anybody can read about. It's worse than what you can see on TV. Go through it and I promise you it's going to change who you are as a person. And it's going to make you more bitter. It's going to make you more angry. And it's also going to make you realize that there is no comparison. There is no, oh, well, Democrats and Republicans are just as bad as each. No, they're not.
No, they're not.
They are. No. Republicans are destroying people. They are destroying families. They are destroying people's very identities. And there is no comparison between those two parties anymore. That is a ridiculous argument. And that is what this always leads me to. So sorry, I got off on a little tangent there, but this just absolutely infuriating.
It is warranted. Yeah, and they're doing it over you saying a thing. Yeah. So I will close by saying, and I tried to warn people along the way, but over the last 5 years or so, as the concept of cancel culture became really big, and obviously that was just a rebranding of political correctness. And some people who weren't hard right extremists were like, yeah, maybe the Democrats are doing a cancel culture. Maybe they're too censorious. They're trying to control everything that you say. They're doing political correctness. Political correctness is like if somebody says the R word and someone else is like, hey, that seems kind of offensive. How dare you try to control our speech with your, oh, saying it's not politically correct. They're going to lock people up for saying a pronoun. But we're the side that's politically correct. We're the side with the cancel culture. They want to end your career, end your life, put you on the sex registry because you say a word they would prefer you don't say. If you do not participate in the actively participate in the bullying of children, we're going to literally lock you up.